Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another behind-the-scenes episode for the Patron Saint of Suicides. And once again, obviously, it's myself, Vince, and Alex on here. This will be our third and final behind-the-scenes episode for these.
Hi everybody, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we wanted to kind of talk about the production of the show, the behind-the-scenes stuff, talking to the crew that made the music, put the sound effects together, and made everything sound fantastic. People already know us, so go for it.
My name is Chroma, and I am the line and layout producer, editor, whatever you want to call it.
Our titles are fluid here. Doc?
My name is Eric Howell. I am the audio engineer mixer of Audiome, and I was really happy to be a part of this project.
Nice!
And if you hear us refer to someone as Doc throughout this, that's him, because he is the podcast doctor.
Yeah, you know, I'm a pharmacy tech, you know, by days.
I know Doc and Chroma have some stories they want to share, but there's a bunch of stuff that, you know, we've worked on together. Kind of bring you up to speed on the magic of the layout, really what makes it sound so good and what makes it work. So I think the first thing that I had wanted to talk about that was like one of the very first things that we were super excited about from the beginning was the train sounds for these. Obviously, the show is set in California, and so Doc, you found an actual like sound pack for trains from a local train yard around there, right?
Yeah, it was the actual train yard in Oakland, and I was really excited to find that because it was, you know, bring some realism to the audio.
That was pretty cool. I remember sending it to Alex. Like, it was one of the first things that we talked about for the layout. I was like, oh yeah, and our audio engineer found you know, train sounds from the actual train yard around there.
For people who didn't actually listen to this season and have just tuned into the bonus episodes, there's a train shootout. And the train shootout happens in a line in around San Francisco called BART. And the thing about BART cars is they don't sound like other trains. It's this unique sound. And it would have worked if it was just a normal train sound, but the idea, that particular squeal of the BART car pulling into the station, it doesn't, there's nothing else that actually sounds like it. So the fact that Doc, that you found that, is just completely brings this to life. Doc, can you talk about how you constructed the train shootout?
It probably took I don't know, over a month of just working on that one scene to get the feel right. Because it can, you put too much and it starts sounding kind of busy, and you know, you do too little and it doesn't really get the full effect. So it's kind of like it just kind of slowly builds. And yeah, there's like 10 layers of gun sounds. Like there's the shooting, the cocking of the guns, the bullet casings falling, the bullets hitting the windows, the bullets hitting the side of the train door. Just as much as we could do, we threw it in there. It's a really exciting scene, and it took a really long time to get it right.
Yeah, but it still sounds really clean, like you said.
One of the scene gets called back so many times and gets told in a lot of different ways in kind of a Rashomon kind of way throughout the season. And one of the things that you did I really loved is I think the main character Haven is kind of retelling her version of this, and when she's kind of on the ground in the middle of the gunfire, like over her narration, you can kind of start to hear a little bit of that tinnitus creep in the background, and I remember thinking that was just a great touch.
Was that episode 2? That's probably my favorite scene in just the whole series. So this past 4th of July, I went to go buy some fireworks, and there's these two guys kind of arguing in the background, and one of the guys pulls out a gun and like points it at the guy's head. And of course I start freaking out and I take off running. And it was that same kind of feeling. It was like, it was happening really fast and really slow at the same time. And that's kind of the vibe I wanted to have for that was, it's all happening at once. It's like this, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just this terrifying moment of surrealism.
Yeah.
On a lighter note. Just kidding. I think I remember talking to both you guys, Chroma and Doc, about the tinnitus thing. I was like, how do we even make one of these, you know?
Yeah, you can create them.
And I remember looking everywhere and I was just like, no, that's not the right one. That's not the right one. And I think you found the final one, right, Doc?
Yeah, I think we went through quite a few to get the right one.
Surprising how many different like high-pitched squeaks there are.
Yeah, because some of them are overbearing.
One of my favorite stories also, not necessarily about this episode, but Doc, you people aren't going to really get the full effect for like how amazing you are at this audio kind of stuff until they know your story about, you know, like being anxious when you go to buy things to make Foley sound effects.
Oh gosh.
So can you please elaborate?
Yeah, just for example, like I had to make some teeth grinding noises for a different thing we were working on, and so I had to go to the store, and I was walking all over looking for something for the perfect sound, and I ended up finding some pork rinds, and I bought those, and then I had to get some chain sounds, and I found this guy and that worked there. It was at like Lowe's, and I got him to cut me like a 1 foot piece of chain. It was just so awkward because I'm just standing there while he's cutting this 1 foot piece of chain for me so I can make this one chain sound. And it's just like every couple of days I go to the store to like buy some random thing.
Yep. And you said you're worried that people are just like, what the hell is he buying? And it's like, in reality, yeah. He's just making sound effects.
Yeah, I got pork rinds and 1 foot of chain.
Yep.
He's doing something weird.
You've been through it all, though. I mean, you stuck your arm in the toilet for the other project we were working on. You poured, leftover mashed potatoes and soup or something into a bucket.
Yeah, it was leftover Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah, that's what it was. What other sound effects did you make for this one specifically?
Well, it's not just specific to this, but it's actually kind of become our signature sound. So there's this... like we call it the scuttle sound. It's the sound of like feet kind of shuffling all over and kind of fighting. And we try to put that in every single one of our shows that we work on, but it's actually me and my pregnant wife fighting in the garage. I mean, she was in on it. Like we weren't fighting, you know, it's like I was trying to be a jerk. Like she was in on it, but yeah, it's kind of become our little thing that we throw in, but it was used a lot in this series. Like, several times.
Do you wear specific shoes or do you mic the ground in a different way?
Well, it's kind of funny because I wanted the sound of boots in there, but I actually don't own any boots. So my wife wore boots. And so she's playing like the dominant role.
So you got attacked by your wife. We'll restate.
Yeah, actually, yeah, my pregnant wife attacked me. That's why I like it.
And you have it on tape too. That's the important part.
You were forced to defend yourself with a link of chain and some pork rinds.
Oh no!
This exactly. is just
getting worse and worse. But yeah, that sound has become like our Wilhelm scream. You guys know that?
Yep.
I don't. No.
Chroma, can you tell that story?
Oh, geez.
I put you on the spot.
Let's see. I know it was in Godzilla. I don't know if it originated there.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it was in Godzilla, and the Wilhelm scream is that, "Aah!" that you hear in almost every movie with, like, the requires a scream. And
it's like a calling card for, like, audio, like other audio engineers.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And they all use the exact same one. It's in Star Wars, like, six different times. It's been in
hundreds of movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the same clip, and nobody knows who made that either. Yep. It's just, like, a really funny, iconic thing, but this has become ours, apparently. It's in every one of our audio dramas so far.
Let's see. Something else that I made for this. I don't know why, but we end up using the sound of keys, like keys jingling a lot. Mm-hmm. Like it's just an easy way to show movement, like while someone's walking, because, you know, we can't have video. So we have to just find unique ways with audio to show movement. And we had like a very limited amount of key jingling sounds. So I spent like an hour just recording key jingling just so we can like have some more unique sounds, because it gets used a lot, especially in this because of cops.
Yeah, we keep using, we keep having police officer characters in all of our stuff.
Cops and keys.
Cops and keys. Jangly bits.
God.
I wanted to ask all three of you guys, as kind of like the outsider, I'm actually fascinated, and I would imagine people listening to this might be too, of, so you guys are kind of audio media, so Chroma, Doc, and Vince, can you just talk a little bit about what your roles are and what parts of the show each of you work on?
Who wants to go first?
Is Vince there? Is Vince there?
I was waiting for somebody else's turn. No.
Well, it starts with Vince.
Yeah.
So he's like the producer. He's kind of like the head honcho. He kind of runs the show.
Okay, we can all describe what the other person does. So Chroma is our line producer, layout expert. She has really, really helped with this show. And she's worked on some other stuff with us as well. But for this one, I don't think we would even be getting it done right about now if not for her. She came in and really just like blew away with these episodes. Like the lines were just... She laid out all of the audio so that they all match the scripts, right? Every single take, found the best takes on all of these, laid them all out so that the pacing was right. That way we could just go in and add music, Foley, all that stuff. And it cut the time down by like an immense amount. I probably did these four times faster after she started doing the line layouts.
Yep. And Doc is our magic, our magical wizard of audio.
Is that it? You're gonna undersell him like that?
No,
Vince's. Vince does so much more.
Let me stumble on my words for a second. He is the gatekeeper. Doc is the gatekeeper. He makes sure that everything is perfect, and that if somebody screwed up, he will fix it. He's a magical person. Excuse me.
What is it? There's only Zul. It could be there's only Doc.
there's gatekeeper. Only Doc.
Yeah. But no, Doc, he creates a bunch of custom sound effects for us, obviously, but then he'll also lay them out, adjust the pacing, add the Foley atmosphere, and then all of the actual effects to the tracks so that you can hear things. Like, we can put in a sound effect. Like, you could put in a bunch of lines with, like, you know, some chairs and things like that, and a fan, but that doesn't necessarily make it into a living room. The thing that makes it into a living room is the reverb and the IR and everything that you add as actual effects on top of these sound effects and on top of the voices, so that the reverb matches for every character and it all sounds like they're in the same space, even though they recorded separately. And so Doc goes in, adds all of that, matches the volumes, mixes it all together so that it sounds perfect and like an actual scene, and then he'll master it the entire episode so that, you know, everything is the same volume, everything is coming out cleanly and pristine. So Chroma and I can do little bits of this stuff, but if Doc was not a part of our team, we would not exist.
Yeah. It would not be as great as it is. Like, I've told Doc before that I He is my standard for audio drama, because if something is not as good as how Doc would put it together, it's crap.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah. This episode is great. I love this episode.
How long have you guys been working with each other?
It's actually been a year as of the 10th of July, so a couple days from now. It was kind of like serendipitous that it happened, actually. I had put together the first season of How I Died on my own, and it sounded like crap. But, you know, produced it and published it, and then we kind of like generated some fans here and there. And Doc was actually one of our first fans to jump in and join our little Discord family. And, you know, he just kind of fit right in. And then he was like, oh, by the way, you know, I'll occasionally edit podcasts. And I was like, do tell. And it kind of grew from there. We realized that this pharmacist tech by day is actually an audio genius by night. And we started working together on some projects and turned it into, you know, like Chroma said, this is the standard of quality for all of our stuff going forward. And Chroma was actually in another Discord channel called the Audio Fiction Network, which we're sort of affiliated with. And we were talking in there for a little bit. She wanted to produce and make her own audio drama. And then from there kind of joined Audio. And, you know, as a fan of both How I Died and audio dramas in general. And then, you know, we all just hit it off as a team. And so it was just a natural fit. I think, you know, to bring her on as working on different parts and pieces.
And me and Vince are like twins. Like, we're like,
oh, yeah.
What, like a week apart for our birthdays.
Yep.
And like, we have the same kind of personality.
Both of our wives are teachers.
Yes. Like, there's so many weird things that were the same.
And we've discovered them all over time. And then, you know, that's the joke, is that Doc and I are the same person. Now, we've got quite a little like hodgepodge of a misfit family around here, but it's worked out. I think we work really well together, too.
Yep. Crazy family.
Yeah. And Chroma, actually, for the Patron Saint of Suicides production, was a main component in recommending things to like flow better and things to cut out.
She was like the line editor.
Yeah, she was the line editor. Yeah,
I was the complainer. Like, not that I didn't like it. I loved it. I wanted it to be better. So like, I pointed out everything that was like, can you get them to change this?
Yeah, so Alex, do you want to talk about that process a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for me as kind of the writer is I am a huge fan of audio drama and really wanted to get involved, but I learned over the course of season one of this of how different a book is stylistically from writing an audio drama. And just the idea of like, 2 pages of narrative in a book that you'd read in 2 minutes that could explain a lot of stuff could be 10 minutes of a horribly boring, laborious narrative that people don't want to listen to. And just the, it feels like there's so much more of a role in pacing and kind of the balance of the different elements. And so when I remember when we were first, I tried to cut, like, my process as a writer was just like cutting and cutting and cutting as much as I can without doing structural damage to the story so that people would be confused if they listened to it. But I remember, like, Vince, I remember when we initially talked and when we started recording, there would be like episodes 1 and 2 definitely have like a lot of monologuing. And I think it works for this season, but also going forward, I'm realizing as we get into the later episodes, like for me, episode 10 is my favorite. And part of it is just the pacing and the balance of everything just works really well. And it makes me really understand how different craft writing for this medium is.
Mm-hmm.
But Chroma, I really liked your suggestions because, like, as somebody who's pretty new to this field, it sort of kept me honest of like, yeah, like, mm-hmm. The audience doesn't necessarily need to know this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I listened to an audio drama was actually when I was 10, and I used to listen to them obsessively in the car during, like, family road trips. And so it's something that I was familiar with. You have to trust your audience sometimes, like give them the sound effects, but sometimes just trust them that they're going to understand what's going on. That's a big thing. And that's one of the reasons why I say limit narration whenever you can, for whenever you need it. And that's part of the reason why I gave so much critique about it.
That makes sense. And, you know, one of the things I like about the writing for audio drama that inspires me is, like, a lot of people are sophisticated enough to write for this medium in terms of, like, I think it's Life After.
Oh, yeah.
Does a really good job of creating these audio blind spots in a way where you wouldn't have written it any other way for a book or for a TV show, because you're taking advantage of the fact that we can't see things in the way you're writing it.
I think episode 10, like, really does a good job of that. I think that the toilet scene is just, like, the perfect audio drama scene.
Episode 10 is the best episode.
And it was fun to put together.
I was nerding out so much when I was putting that together. I was like, Doc, I cannot wait until you hear this. This is amazing.
Yeah, that was a really fun episode. I remember I had never listened to so many toilet sounds to find the right ones for those in my life. That was really fun.
You're a toilet expert now.
I am, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then Fennell's actor, Kyle, like, he did really well in making sure there was just enough drowning sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did he do that?
I don't know. I'm guessing he, like,
asked him.
Yeah. I mean, we can't ask him. But yeah, it was, that scene was very easy to put together because he made sure there was just enough of everything. It was phenomenal. I loved putting that together.
Mm-hmm.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I think Chroma was actually one of the driving forces behind our change to the finale. So if you're listening to this after you've listened to the main season, there was actually a 15th episode. So that we combined episode 14 and episode 15 into a single episode and reduced a bunch of narration and some kind of combined a few scenes. That way the pacing was a little bit faster, and we also wanted to end it on that final impactful scene with Haven as opposed mm-hmm. to ending it with Blossom. Originally it would have gone it would have gone Blossom section, Haven section, and then an additional section with Blossom where he finds the cell phone or reviews the cell phone at the end. And that was something that, like, we had talked about, I know, a couple different times, Alex. We talked about, like, which way should it end, and I was, like, really interested to get your feedback on that. Was this the ending you had in mind? Do you think it's more impactful the other way?
I think it works a lot more, and I actually like the fact that the ending on the Haven scenes, Vince, one of your editorial suggestions was kind of starting with the cold open of Haven talking to somebody who we don't know at the time. But it's kind of bookends the whole season pretty nicely having it end on that note too.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Fun fact for this season is that Doc actually didn't read the finale. He listened to the finale while he was putting it together. So mm-hmm. he didn't know the twist the entire time.
Yep. Yeah, that blew my mind.
And so we were joking about it in the beginning. I was like, you know, you've got to lay out Turo and Haven's lines on the phone initially, and he was like, you know, okay, whatever, where's the scene, blah blah blah. It's like, oh, don't worry about it, you'll get to it in the end.
Literally the end.
Yeah. And something interesting that, like, it was interesting to hear as we were working on this together is that, you know, from Doc's perspective, he was working on this as it was going. So he put episode one together and then put episode two, etc. And so he was like, oh, you know, these characters are really interesting. Oh, Haven's kind of a fun character. And then midway through, he was like, I don't think I like Haven as much anymore. And then at the finale, he was like, okay, no, I like Haven again.
Oh my God, I want episode 13. I was like, I hate Haven. I hate her so much. Oh my God. I hope she's the bad guy so Blossom can throw her in front of a train. And so I was very happy at the end.
I do have to say, episode 13 has my favorite line in the entire series.
Oh yeah?
It's the lady in the hospital, and she says, my mother's a witch. She enchanted my comb. I just love that line.
Fun fact on that. So a long time ago, I was actually dating somebody who was in the psychiatric field, and I went into a hospital. I've been into a couple wings like this. And there was somebody sitting on the floor, and that's exactly what she said to me.
Oh, wow. Wow.
She was schizophrenic, and she thought her mother had enchanted her comb. And I thought that was a really interesting short way to see how, you know, people with schizophrenia present in all sorts of different ways, but somebody who like has that level of delusion, but also that level of interactivity, and that, like, the way I describe it with some people, it's like life is augmented reality. Like, they interact with all of us the way we would normally. They just see other stuff too.
I knew there had to be a story because that was very specific.
Yeah, that's true. It was really specific.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, you know, I'm a writer, so like I pull bits and pieces from a lot of things. Like the scene of Haven running away from a bachelorette on stage, that actually like happened to a friend of mine who's one of the comics I interviewed to kind of get the background on what it would be like to actually be a live comedian. And he's like, yeah, it was really weird. I had to just dodge this woman the whole set.
That's really funny though. Oh, something else I did want to bring up. Chroma, the teeth.
Oh, the teeth.
Or the tooth, sorry.
Yeah, the tooth. Oh, yeah. I was like, every single time that was coming up, I was like, why?
You kept asking, does this lead to something, you know?
Yep. I was like, what does this lead to? Please tell me it leads to something, because every single time...
All right, so this is a good example of, like, the difference between book writing and audio drama writing, where, like, you know, you can go on asides like this, and they're, like, this weird little idiosyncratic thing that gives you a different facet of the character, and in a book, it'll read okay, but there's just no room for it here. Like this... In a way, like, one of the things writing scripts has taught me is the economy of language. Mm. And if it's not pushing the story forward, it shouldn't be in there. Like, there's no room for charming little tangents.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of takes you out of the story. Another thing that I nitpicked, I think it was taken out, was I said every single time, like, Haven said, I think to myself. That's another thing, because, like, in written fiction, in books and novels, you know, you kind of think of it like a journal. But whenever it's an audio drama, you're thinking it like you're in the character's mind. So it's like, it's weird for somebody to say, I think to myself, whenever you're thinking that you're already hearing their internal monologue.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless you're Louis Armstrong singing What a Wonderful World.
Yeah. That was a deep cut, Alex. Also, the song's going to be in my head for the next couple days.
Well, there you
so
go.
That's fine. Yep, I'm happy with that.
I'm really happy we finally acquired the rights to that song for this show.
Yeah, maybe we can play it as our outro and then just deal with the lawsuit later.
You know, the thing is, if you dropped it in after that final scene, it would kind of work in a creepy way.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of creepy music, Doc, can you talk us a little bit through the music that you made for this?
Sure. So do you know the show The Killing?
It's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, so I listened to that intro a lot, and I kind of wanted to have a similar vibe and kind of use kind of the similar instruments, but throw in a bunch of train sounds and just kind of get this. I don't know. I was just doing my best to kind of encapsulate the feel and the vibe of the show in like 20 seconds.
The intro song is one of my favorite parts. It's just,
yeah, it's really good.
That like hit right before the narration comes in, it's so good.
What, you know, it's funny you bring up The Killing, because The Killing has, visually, they do something that I thought about in terms of, Vince, when we first talked about things like using the train noise as a mnemonic device throughout the, you know, as kind of like a scene wipe, but one of the shows that I really kind of studied was The Killing, because the way visually that show shoots a certain way to create a certain tone and feeling. So you always know that like the universe you're occupying. And what I mean for people who haven't seen the show is that the American version of that show is set in Seattle, and it's sort of perpetually raining on the show. Like the windshields are always being wiped off, and there's always like rain settling on things. So it's always like cloudy and wet and kind of like with a blue pallor to the screen. And it like creates this visual tone for the series in the same way like The Matrix has like that green sheen to everything. I was like hoping for the train noises to kind of be that device for the audio drama, where you would like, you'd always be kind of in this world that was occupied by these sounds.
And too, you know, like with Haven and some of the other victims are always reminded of that night.
The show's about a lot of stuff, but a lot of it is about overcoming trauma and PTSD and that, like the fact that there's so many calls back to that event. And as the series unfolds, you get to see basically how it affects so many different people. And so it's like, it's this ever present thing in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something interesting with the scenes, the flashbacks essentially to the train shooting, is that in this series, when we were laying out the audio and the effects and the Foley, we actually did different variations of the events and the timing, for each person that remembers or talks about the train shooting. So we've got the initial one with Haven, and then we've got the flashback much later on where she's speaking in her recorded statement to the police. And then we've also got a version when the narrator is describing Blossom as he reviews the events of the train. And each one of those actually has slightly different pacing on when things happen, where things happen, like when a bullet is fired, things like that. We did that as kind of like a little fun thing that, you know, someone's memory of it might be a little bit different, or the way it's written down in a police report. you know, varies from.
I mean, I'm a huge Kurosawa fan, and that was sort of, that element was kind of an intentional nod to Rashomon, of the idea of like having a crime dissected by exposing different people's perspectives of that crime. And you know, that comes in the way sonically it's been treated, but also like the way Turo sees his role in the crime is so different from how you know, how Haven sees what happened to her. It's an interesting thing for me to explore, and especially like to kind of bring this around to the world that we're occupying today. Like it's interesting to see, we're in the middle of a lot of cultural shift right now, and it feels like everyone's reading the same book and taking something different away from it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all seeing the same things that are happening, and yet there are people that have completely different perspectives on it. The fact that is such a human reaction is really interesting to me. From production side, the fact that you're able to kind of bring another facet to that through sound, I think, is like even more powerful.
Mm-hmm. It was really interesting because it hadn't occurred to me until we were like working on it, and then, you know, we moved things around a little bit depending on who was speaking. Episode 12 with Diego was probably my favorite episode, and I loved the sound and the way that the scenes differ from the rest of the story. Because we intentionally left out a lot of things that we had added in previous scenes. There's no music in that section. There's not a ton of movement or background sound. It's just like a light buzzing. And then you've got some very subtle clothing rustles as well as chair slides. And putting that scene together was a lot of fun because we delayed some of the sound effects, or intentionally delayed some of the vocals, so that there was just a sound. Based on the way that you had written it, Alex, there were things like, you know, Blossom may say something to Wesley and Wesley doesn't respond right away, so we kind of left it like a pause, and then we added a slight chair squeak, like he was sitting backwards or something like that. And for me, I think that was an impactful section because, like I said, it differed from the rest of it, but also we really used silence as an advantage there, whereas there isn't much in the rest of the show. And then obviously you get to Diego's death at the end of that one, and just, it was Doc's call there to remove the music at that part and just kind of let it fade out into silence.
I really liked that. I don't know why, and this is going to be a deep cut for a lot of people, and most people probably haven't even seen this, but I used to, you know, back a long time ago, I actually, like, watched the show 24. I don't know if you guys ever, like, watched that show, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's in the third season of that show, there's a scene where Kiefer Sutherland's character has to kill somebody who he works with, and the guy he kills is, like, everyone hates the guy, but it still sucks when he has to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like in retrospect, it's like, this is insane. This would never happen in real life. But in the context of the show, it made total sense. And I remember the, you know, 24 famously had that, you know, the ending north sounds, the ending mnemonic sounds of that countdown. And I remember that was the one episode where they didn't have it, because the shock of that guy being killed at the end of that hour was so, they just wanted to let that hang in the air for people. It kind of reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such an impactful scene.
Just Louise is just such a great actor.
He just killed it. Yeah.
Yeah, so incredibly good. One of my favorite little things that I actually snuck in there, I know you talked about the scuffle sound earlier, Doc, but one of the things that I snuck in was when Haven is in her apartment, I think it was episode 13, where she's listening to horror movies in the background.
Yes, I love this so yep. much.
This was yep. my favorite part. I put the audio from a Night of the Living Dead trailer as the like background sounds, and so if you listen closely, well, you don't even really need to listen closely, but you can hear the different sounds, and it's kind of that iconic song that dun, 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 dun. And then right when that scene ends, when she goes to knock on the door or look at the door, and you know, thinks there's somebody out there, we've got the character from Night of the Living Dead going, I think they're coming to get you, Barbara.
I love that.
Wow, that was a good impression.
That was pretty solid. I love stuff like that. I mean, back when I was recording music, I'd throw stuff in there just for the sheer whim of knowing that it was in there. Like there was a one point I have a couple albums out, and there's one where I had 10 people on the album, and one guy was a turntablist, and the sound was very dense. And at one point I was like, it was a part of a song where we're throwing everything in the kitchen sink in there. And I was like, I want to have a chicken in here. And so we went over and we had to find the right chicken. And so I just wanted a chicken on the song. And it's like, it's kind of buried below the mix, but it just like cracks me. It's the juvenile 12-year-old boy in me gets a real kick out of the fact that it's there.
So funny.
So I'm a huge nerd, and I love Pokemon like a lot. And I used to make these Pokemon audio dramas, and one of the scenes where there's another comedian up on stage kind of talk like doing his bit is actually something I pulled from that. It's a Pokemon guy kind of in the background.
Yeah, I forget. I think that was episode 11 or 12.
I think so.
But I didn't know that you put that in there. And I remember pulling up the mix to make some changes to it. And then I saw this, I made a note and I saw this file and it said something, something Pokemon conversation. And I was like, Doc, what is this? And then we played it and I was like, oh, I get it.
So I'm a huge music nerd. And one of my favorite recording stories was when The Who recorded the song Happy Jack. I don't know if you guys all are all familiar with the song, but it's a kind of like a classic rock song. Mm-hmm. And so The Who's drummer was a guy named Keith Moon, who's like famously this wild man. And Pete Townsend was doing his part. And Keith Moon was kind of in the mixing room, you know, behind the console. And he was just making Pete Townsend laugh and just like goofing around. And there was a point where it just was becoming disruptive and Keith Moon couldn't help himself. So they basically like had him crouch below the mixing console so that he wouldn't get in the way of Pete Townsend's recording. But even with that, Keith Moon kept like poking his head up like a gopher. So just to fuck with Pete Townsend, because he just couldn't help himself. And at the end of that track, there's at the end of Happy Jack, you can hear Pete Townsend say in the background, "I saw ya," and it's him pointing to the engineer saying like, "You're busted," and they kept it on the album. And I think like stuff like that is amazing because it's just like it proves that this isn't like pristine work conditions, that this is a very human, sloppy thing sometimes. And there's some of that that I just love because it makes it human.
That's amazing. That's a hilarious story. So I'm actually pulling up one of the mixes right now. I want to say episode 1 had the most sound effect tracks.
Yes, it did.
That was it by both of your recollections. Do you think that was the highest?
Well, I know it's that one because every time I pull up episode 1, like my computer is like trying so hard to keep up.
It freezes.
Yeah, it's like trying to crash because it's just such a huge project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to see how many audio tracks we have in here. Our record, I believe, was like 150 from a How I Died season or episode. So let's see. Wow, it's still loading, so you know it's huge. 119.
Wow.
There's 119 different tracks that make up this single episode.
We've gotten pretty good at consolidating tracks and not making as many as we need to.
Yeah, that's true. Back when I was just learning how to do this before I realized that you could do an envelope for panning, I used to put sound effects for like left, right, and center for everything. So like Crowley in the How I Died season 1 had like Crowley center, Crowley left, and Crowley right, and then I would move the clips in between them as I wanted her to move.
Yeah.
Oh, how far we've come. Yeah. So we've learned a lot. I think we've learned a lot from this season of this show as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell, because, like, you guys have evolved since, like, December.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I actually went back and remixed episode one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my first pass was probably in December or January, and then I ended up redoing it several months later. I think it got better.
Oh, yeah.
I think it sounds amazing.
Episode one is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, that's so funny. It's going to be a weird chapter, I think, for all of us when this actually goes live. We've been working on this for 9 months now.
Yeah, it's like we had a little baby.
Yeah. This is our baby.
A little baby if the baby came with trigger warnings.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think regular babies should come with trigger warnings.
I was thinking the same thing.
But yeah, we did it. It's Alex, you are the official owner of an audio drama. Congratulations, it's an audio
yay.
Drama.
Oh, yay. But I mean, honestly, like, getting into this, I mean, for this to kind of be the first project that I've worked on is kind of amazing. And I'm really looking forward to doing a season two, because I feel like in a way, as a writer, I kind of get it more, or at least I get the medium more. Well, we have the basic story outline for season two. Vince, I don't know if you've shared that with them, but
I haven't yet. No,
I think the season two story is like it has potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a lot of potential. It's like the crime thriller here is like in bits throughout as this story of trauma, but the crime thriller is a huge focus in season two.
I'm glad. I'm looking forward to it.
Can I take a guess? Let's see. I think that season two will start with the train just misses Turo.
Oh god.
I hope what, so.
Okay, I'm done.
I hate to spoil it, but this is a bonus episode, so I should just say Turo is the Mandalorian.
Oh my gosh.
I know. How good is that going to be?
Alex, I think if you proposed that in your outline for season two, I would have been like, well, season one was great. Let's just part ways from there.
See, this is why I'm not a writer. You know, I'm the kind of person that sits in a dark room and mixes all day.
No, I really wanted to do this episode with you guys because I, you know, like the cast gets so much visibility for all these things, and like I really feel like the work that you guys did really helped make this season sing. So like seeing what scenes really pop in this season makes me really appreciate what we could do for season two.
Especially after we let Doc nap for a couple of weeks.
I don't mean tomorrow.
Especially after we let Doc nap for a couple of weeks.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawns something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.